101, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, John Russell, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
American doctors have released details about another operation involving the transplant of pig organs into humans. A medical team from the University of Alabama at Birmingham said it had successfully transplanted pig kidneys into a brain-dead human. The operation took place last September, but was first reported January 20th. Similar operations have taken place in recent months. In October, doctors at New York University temporarily attached a pig kidney to blood vessels outside the body of a brain-dead human. And earlier this month, doctors at University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore transplanted a pig heart into a living human patient. In all of the operations, doctors used organs from genetically modified pigs provided by Virginia-based medical company Revivicor. The latest experiment in Alabama was performed on 57-year-old Jim Parsons, who was declared brain dead after being injured in a motorcycle accident. His family donated his body to science. For a little more than 3 days, until the man's body was removed from life support, the two pig kidneys survived with no signs of immediate rejection, the medical team reported. The results were recently published in a study in the American Journal of Transplantation. Dr. Jamie Locke of the University of Alabama at Birmingham led the new study. She told the Associated Press the experiment marks the beginning of a planned series of pig kidney transplants. The organ shortage is in fact an unmitigated crisis, and we've never had a real solution to it, Locke said. She added that an important finding of the latest operation helped answer a major question. Could the pig kidney blood vessels survive the force of human blood pressure? She said the operation proved that the answer was yes. One kidney was damaged during removal from the pig and did not work effectively, the team reported. But the other quickly started producing urine as a kidney is supposed to. Locke said no pig viruses were passed on to the human and no pig cells were found in the man's bloodstream. She added that the latest experiment showed that brain-dead bodies can serve as much-needed human models to test out possible new treatments. In the donor pigs, scientists removed several genes linked to organ rejection. They also removed another gene in an effort to prevent too much growth of pig heart tissue. Dr. Robert Montgomery has led similar experiments at New York University's Langone Health in New York City. He told the AP that scientists still have a lot to learn about how long pig organs survive and how best to genetically change them. I think different organs will require different genetic modifications, he said. Organ donor organizations estimate there are about 110,000 Americans currently waiting for an organ transplant, and more than 6,000 patients die each year before getting an organ, reports organdonor.gov. I'm Brian Lynn.
Scientists warn that the fast-spreading Omicron will likely not be the last worrisome version of the coronavirus. The Omicron version of the coronavirus was first identified in mid-November. By the first week of January, the World Health Organization reported a record 15 million new COVID-19 cases. That is a 55% increase from the previous week. Every new infection provides a chance for the virus to mutate or change. The fast spread of Omicron means the virus has more chances to develop new versions, called variants. Scientists do not know what the next variants will look like or how they might shape the pandemic. But they say there is no guarantee that new coronavirus variants will cause milder illness or that existing vaccines will work against them. And they urge wider vaccination now, while the shots still work against the virus. Dr. Leonardo Martinez is an infectious disease expert at Boston University. He said, "The faster Omicron spreads, the more opportunities there are for mutation, potentially leading to more variants. Research shows that Omicron is at least 2 times as contagious as the Delta variant and 4 times more contagious than the original version of the virus. Contagious means the variant could easily pass between people. Omicron is also more likely than Delta to reinfect individuals who previously had COVID-19, and to cause breakthrough infections, meaning to cause an infection even if a person is vaccinated. The variant's quick spread increases the chances that the virus will infect and remain inside people with weakened immune systems, giving it more time to develop mutations or changes. Dr. Stuart Campbell-Ray of Johns Hopkins University said, "It's the longer infections that seem to be the most likely breeding grounds for new variants." He added more infections also increased the chances for that to happen. Since Omicron appears to cause less severe disease than Delta, there is hope that it could make the virus milder, like a common cold. It is a possibility, experts say, given that viruses do not spread well if they kill their hosts very quickly. But viruses do not always get less deadly over time. Ray explained that a variant could realize its main goal, replicating or reproducing, if it caused mild infections at first, then caused severe illness later. This would give time for an infected person to spread the virus to others before getting very sick. When SARS-CoV-2, the virus that caused COVID-19, first appeared, no one was immune. But infections and vaccines have given at least some immunity to much of the world, so the virus must change to survive and spread to others. There are many possible ways for such change to take place. Animals could possibly release new variants. Dogs and cats, deer and farm-raised mink are some of the animals that could be infected by the virus. The virus could mutate within them and then jump back to people. Another possibility is that people could get infected with both Omicron and Delta at the same time. Such infections could create what Ray calls Frankenvariants, with qualities of both variants. I'm John Russell.
The maker of a test some colleges use to decide who to accept, the SAT, said it will stop offering students paper tests by 2024. The SAT is a standardized test. That means it is the same for everyone who takes it on the same date. The College Board in New York City creates the SAT and PSAT tests. Most American students take these tests before applying to college. The organization said it will no longer provide paper tests for international students in 2023 and a year later for American students. The test also will be 1 hour shorter and given to students on a computer, the organization said. However, students will still need to take the test at a school or testing center. Priscilla Rodriguez is the vice president for college readiness at the College Board. She said the test will be easier to take, easier to give, and more relevant. The SAT tests a student's knowledge of math, reading, and writing. It takes at least 3 hours to complete. A number of colleges and universities made the SAT and the competing ACT optional when testing centers closed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. That means many students are permitted, but are not required, to send their test scores as part of their college applications. A smaller number of schools, such as those in the University of California system, decided to stop using the tests completely. Some experts wondered if the move to make testing less important would hurt the testing companies. Rodriguez said the College Board is working to make the test better for a computer, and not just moving the paper test to a digital form. We're taking full advantage of what delivering an assessment digitally makes possible, she said. Assessment is another word for test. Even with the change in test requirements, 1.5 million students still took the SAT in 2021. That number, however, is down from 2.2 million in 2020. One organization that opposes standardized tests is FairTest. It follows how many universities do not require test scores for students currently applying to college. It said about 80% of colleges and universities are now not requiring standardized tests. Some students still take the tests, even if they do not send in their scores. That is because organizations that give out financial aid, known as scholarships, sometimes choose students based on test scores. A public opinion study by the College Board showed that students want the SAT to continue so they can put their scores on their college applications. Rodriguez said her organization will use the test scores to help students connect with job training schools and community colleges, and not just four-year colleges. She said the College Board wants to give students more information about what they can do after high school. In addition, moving to a computer-based test will make scores available sooner. There have been past stories about paper tests getting lost. One student from Virginia recently took a practice version of the new test. Natalia Cosio, a 16-year-old, said the new version was less stressful than the paper test. She said the computer test also includes a calculator, which students can use for math problems, which is how many of them do higher-level math in school. The College Board said students who do not own a computer or schools which do not have enough computers will be given computers to use on test day. I'm Katie Weaver.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Larry West and Morris Joyce continue the story of President Woodrow Wilson and American involvement in World War I.
'18 was the final year of the most terrible war the world had ever known. But World War I did not end quickly or easily. The German army made a final effort to defeat the Allies. The United States had entered the conflict, and Germany wanted a victory before large numbers of American troops could get to Europe. Germany's effort became easier after it signed a peace treaty with the new Bolshevik government in Russia. The treaty made it possible for Germany to use all its forces against the Allies on its western border. In the end, however, Germany's plan failed. Allied troops pushed back the German attack in a series of bloody battles. The addition of American soldiers greatly increased Allied strength.
The leader of American forces in Europe was General John J. Pershing. General Pershing used a weapon new to the world of war, air power. Airplanes were used first, simply as eyes in the sky. They discovered enemy positions so ground artillery could fire at them. Then they were used as fighter planes. They carried guns to shoot down other planes. Finally, planes were built big enough to carry bombs. General Pershing also used another new weapon of war, tanks. He put these inventions together for his battle plan against Germany.
Pershing's target was the Argonne Forest. It was a tree-covered area Germany had held since 1914. The forest was protected by barbed wire and by defensive positions built of steel and concrete. It was the strongest part of the German line. It also was the most important part. If Argonne fell, Germany's final lines of defense would fall. The fighting in the Argonne Forest was fierce. Thousands of men died. Sometimes troops got lost because the forest was so thick with trees. But day by day, the Allies pushed the Germans back.
Germany's leaders were losing hope. In September 1918, they met with German ruler Kaiser Wilhelm. The army chief reported that the war was lost. Germany had no choice, he said. It must give back all the territory it had seized and try to negotiate a peace agreement. Other officials told the Kaiser that the situation at home was bad, too. People were starving. Revolutionaries were plotting to overthrow the government. Kaiser Wilhelm agreed it might be best to seek peace now, before Germany was destroyed completely. He asked his foreign secretary to send a secret message to American President Woodrow Wilson. The message would propose immediate negotiations to end the war.
President Wilson received it. He did not tell the other Allied leaders. Instead, he returned a message to Germany. Wilson asked if Germany was willing to accept the peace proposals he had offered many months earlier. Germany's chancellor answered that his government did accept the proposals. However, the events of war ended the secret exchange of messages between Germany and the United States. German submarines had increased attacks on Allied shipping. 2 passenger ships were sunk. 820 persons were killed. Many were women and children. President Wilson was shocked. He told Germany there could be no peace negotiations with such an inhuman enemy.
In late October 1918, Wilson sent a final message to Germany. He wanted a settlement that would make it impossible for Germany to fight again. Germany, Wilson said, must promise to withdraw its forces from all Allied territory. It also must close its weapons factories. Wilson added that the Allies would negotiate only with a government that truly represented the people of Germany, not with military rulers. The new German chancellor was Maximilian, Prince of Baden. Prince Max received President Wilson's message. He succeeded in getting Kaiser Wilhelm to dismiss the man responsible for German military policy. But he failed to get the Kaiser himself to give up power.
Not all Allied leaders supported President Wilson's plan to end World War I. They could not agree on some parts of it. Britain, for example, opposed the part about freedom of the seas. Britain said it would prevent the kind of naval blockade which had been so effective against Germany. France and Italy opposed the part about creating a new international organization. Wilson had called it a League of Nations. To solve these differences, Wilson sent his closest advisor to Europe to meet with Allied leaders. The discussions were long and sometimes bitter. Many of the Allies thought Wilson was being too kind to the defeated enemy. But in the end, they all agreed to accept the plan as a starting point for peace talks.
By this time, in early November, the situation in Germany was growing worse. Communists and socialists were calling for a rebellion. The Navy was ordered to go to sea. Sailors refused and killed some officers. Reports told of rebellion in parts of the German army, too. The nation's leaders had no choice. They would negotiate a peace treaty. On the morning of November 8th, a German delegation went to Allied military headquarters to discuss terms.
The Germans were met by the Supreme Allied Commander, Marshal Ferdinand Foch of France. Foch greeted them coldly, and he did not offer peace terms until they officially asked for a ceasefire. Germany, not the Allies, had to put down its weapons first. The Germans were shocked when they heard the terms. The list was severe. Among other things, Germany must withdraw its forces from all occupied territories. It must give up Alsace-Lorraine, a part of France it had held for almost 50 years. It must give up most of its weapons, including airplanes, submarines, and battleships. And it must turn over large numbers of trucks, railroad engines, and other supplies.
The German delegation said it could not sign such an agreement. Germany, it said, was not surrendering. It was only asking for a ceasefire. The delegation said it could not accept the peace terms without communicating with the government in Berlin. But the German government was falling apart. Kaiser Wilhelm had finally resigned and left the country. A new cabinet had been formed, and a new prime minister had declared a German republic. Yet the situation remained unsettled. Because of this, the German delegation negotiating with the Allies had to decide for itself. After much argument, the men agreed to the Allied terms. They signed the peace treaty. A ceasefire began a few hours later.
News that the shooting had stopped set off wild celebrations throughout the world. People danced in the streets. They cheered the end of the worst war in history. There were celebrations along the battle lines, too. But these were quiet. Soldiers from both sides climbed out of long trenches dug in the ground. They met the men who, a short while earlier, had been their deadly enemy. The bloody European conflict was over. The dispute, however, was not. Another fierce battle was ready to begin. This time, the battle would be among diplomats. The fight over the peace treaty, officially ending World War I, was about to begin.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.